Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to author G.D. Grace's A Touch of Grace, Literary Magic, on Blog Talk Radio.
One day I listened as if I had been spoken to for the first time, and I was eagerness astute, engaged and open as a vast African plain. I was vested, humble in soul, and wealthy in heart. I was two-way as opposed to one-way as I stood at familiar crossroads, realizing that everything prior to were lessons to be learned. I have been cultivated wisdom, intensely driven to climb the tallest I once avoided. Something changed and whispered convincingly, "You shan't ever be the same." Now I know it was evolution. People of the world, I am your host, GD. Welcome to iArtist Presents on A Touch of Grace. Today's date is Friday, March 14th, 2014, and the time is 1:30 p.m. We are certainly in spring. The weather is beautiful outside. The nights have been so warm, and I have been waiting. It's almost food for the soul. I'm excited about today's guest. They are two talented literary women spreading inspiring messages that console the spirit, adding light to darkness and sunshine to the soul. One of them has shown her unyielding support of this show by passing along the names of other talented authors who have been guests on the show. So not only is she an author in her own right, she is also one who pays it forward by helping find exposure for other gifted individuals. The other is one of the incredible talents that Paulette Harper introduced me to. Her name is Terry Cato. And both of them join us today to discuss their life and passion in literary. Listeners, I welcome Elder Paulette Harper and Terry Cato to A Touch of Grace. Ladies, how are you doing this lovely Friday afternoon?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh,
and
you're
I'm
welcome.
Good as well. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Well, thank you both. And, you know, there's no better place to start than at the beginning. First of all, I want to just praise you so much for the work that you're doing out there, enlightening souls and encouraging and empowering people. So I think really God smiles on that. So I really appreciate you guys being here today. And again, there's no better place to start. So Paulette, can you share with us where life began for you and when you were tapped on the shoulder to write?
I sure can. I actually started writing. I was raised and brought up in a small California, and my family, I'm the youngest of eight, and my background actually was in finance. And from that, I really I didn't think about writing books as I was growing up. I wanted to just get married, have kids, do ministry. And actually writing a book was really far from my mind, but because of experiences in life and trials and testing, I found myself writing my first book about one of my own, one of the hardest areas in my life that I had to go through, and that was going through a divorce. And so that's really where I came from and where the beginning of me writing and sharing my own personal story, my own personal testimony. And so the first writer in my family, in my immediate family, I should say, the first writer, and also my work, my family, of course, supports me in what I do, and just really sharing what I had experienced and putting that in book form has really been a tremendous blessing to my life and then also my family. And that's really where I started writing, no idea about writing, but really had that unction and that push, that nudge from God to share what he had done in my life in an area or in a season where I thought that there was really no hope and no purpose for really what I had gone through. But of course God had a different plan and purpose for my life.
Well, that's amazing. And I have to tell you right now, he couldn't have picked a better person. I've had a couple of people on that spoke about all sorts of things, adversities that they faced in life. And most certainly, you know, the outlet that was given to them was to actually write it and journal it out and then share it with the world. And I believe that this is how you do pay it forward. You share your experiences. So I think that's incredible. And I'm going to come back to you, Paulette. So now I'm going to ask that same question of Terry. Tell us about your beginnings and where life started for you and how you got into writing.
Okay, sure. For me, I was actually born in Mobile, Alabama. I am the oldest of five children. And when I was younger, I didn't really know that I had a talent for writing, although everybody, you know, people in my family and my teachers would always tell me that I was a good writer. And probably my earliest memory of, you know, just exhibiting that talent was when I would get coloring books, and instead of coloring the pages, I would look at the pages and I would write sentences describing what I saw on the page, and then I would color. And, you know, I remember one of my uncles, one of his friend girls was at our house one day, and she saw me coloring, and then she wanted to see the picture, and you know, she realized that I had actually wrote sentences under the pictures, and she was just kind of going through, and she was like, oh, my God, you know, she was like, these sentences, you know, are so well thought out, and, you know, she just really, really praised me. But, again, at that age, I really didn't think about any kind of talent for writing. And, you know, just growing up, always, you know, had a passion for reading and writing, but never thought about doing it as a career. Went to college, got a degree in business, and actually as I was about to graduate from college, had an idea for a book at that time, but I was like, you know what, I don't know if a career in writing is something that I could actually do. I really need to pursue my business degree and, you know, pursue a career in business, which is what I got my degree in. So I kind of put it on the back burner, didn't really think about it again. You know, went through my 20s, you know, working. I have a background in professional sports and working at a nonprofit. You know, did that, got married, you know, went through some things that I actually share in my book. And that's kind of how I got the unction to write a book. It was as a result of me going through a failed engagement, a failed relationship, and then going on a seven-year journey to prepare myself to be a wife and mother. And I didn't realize at the time that that experience would actually be documented in a book. I was just, you know, going through the motions, ended up getting married and would just share my testimony with other people, and was in a marriage enrichment class at my church. And the first lady, she, you know, just wanted me to share my testimony with the single ladies in the class. And as I was sharing, and then on the way home, I was thinking about it, and just something came to me where the Holy Spirit was like, you know what, you really need to document this. You need to memorialize it. You need to put this experience in a book. And he gave me the title for it, which the working title was Always a Bridesmaid. And, you know, I kind of did an outline that night, and that's kind of how I got to my first book. It, you know, it was kind of a windy path.
Wow. Well, I tell you right now, there's a singer, Mary J. Blige, who most of her most incredible work came from experiences of adversity. And a lot of people would say, you know, we liked it when Mary was unhappy because that seemed to be when she made some of the most compelling music. So for you, Paulette, you mentioned some of the experiences that you were involved in that taunted you to actually start writing. Was there one specific experience that said, you know, I have to do this and this is how I'm going to approach getting better?
That's a great question. yeah, it was really when I went through my divorce. And so I was married to a pastor. And because we had a church, we had ministry, and we live in such a place and a time where when ministers get divorced, it is you know, headline news. And so going through a divorce, being in the church and being in the ministry, we were no different. It was headline news. And so I didn't really know how God was going to restructure my life, because I was broken and I had a lot of scars and I was bruised from that experience. And it was something that I had not planned on. It was something that I didn't have a plan B with my life. I knew this was the purpose of me being married. I knew this is the direction that God wanted me. But then we had this, you know, break in our relationship. And so going through that, not realizing that God wanted me to talk about my own story in this book. And so a lot of times that's what happens. We go through these experiences in life, and God has a reason that he allows us to go through what we go through, whether it's painful, very hurtful, very disappointing, can really break you. He allows life to really shape and mold us. And so I was no different. And so not realizing the direction in which I was going to go, I had enough faith to believe that God didn't allow me to go through all this turmoil in vain. And so my first book, that was in This Is Now, This Broken Vessel Restored, was really birthed out of all of that anguish and out of all that pain. And I had no idea that God had this plan for my life, and yet me writing the book really unfolded all that. It gave me the revelation that I needed as to why he allowed me to go through it. And so a lot of times we go through things in life, it's not even about us. It's about really helping other people that go through it. And so because of those experiences that I had went through, books in me were birthed. And I really believe that had I not gone through the things that I had gone through in life, I wouldn't be here where I am today. I wouldn't be penning books like I am today. And so I'm real grateful to God for the experiences that I had gone through, even those that brought the most anguish and the most heartache and the most tears in my life. God, you know, caused those tears to become joy, and I'm living now in a place where I'm really grateful to be able to share my story, to share my writing, to pen more books, and to be able to be a blessing to other people that may be going through similar experiences.
I think it's incredible, and there's a saying that I learned in the walls of AA, is that we are sick as our secrets, and a lot of people hold on to these false pretenses to present to the world a imitation of life that they want to project without, it's almost like covering up, you know, what really is going on. And I believe that those people are some of the sickest people here on earth. And so for you to have the courage to funnel into your writing something that was very painful for you, and then putting it out for the masses, I think that it is just an act of courage. And so, Terry, I'm going to shoot this message to you. You mentioned that your book was almost a bridesmaid, and I can almost tell what that was about. But can you take us through what led up to the book? Can you talk a little bit about the experience of what the book theme deals with?
Absolutely. Similar to Paulette, my book was actually birthed out of a failed relationship and engagement as well. During my 20s, you know, as I became of age and realized that I wanted to be married, you know, you come of age and you think, okay, yeah, I think I want to be married. You know, I got this life thing, my career under control. What I realized was that I didn't really have any good examples of what a successful marriage looked like. So I remember one of my cousins giving me a book, and it was years ago. It was an author. She did a book called Knight in Shining Armor. And a lot of singles ministries at that time, a lot of ladies my age, they were all reading this book. And kind of at the end of the book, the author, she encourages you to just go on like a six-month quest to prepare yourself to be a wife. So at the end of reading this book, you know, I was like, you know, I want to go on this 6-month course and, you know, do what she said. I want to prepare myself to become a wife. So I started the process of preparation, and about a year and a half, maybe 2 years into the process, I didn't think it would take me that long, but I reconnected with my college sweetheart, and we became engaged, and, you know, I was thinking, wow, you know, this is actually perfect. You know, I've started this process of preparation, you know, a year and a half, 2 years into the process, I reconnect with my college sweetheart. Well, turns out, you know, early on, it became apparent that, you know, this relationship was not ordained by God. Now, my college sweetheart, he was a man of God, you know, just like I was saved and was a woman of God. So it didn't have anything to do with his spirituality. It was that we weren't on the same level spiritually. We just couldn't agree. There were things, we weren't equally yoked, I'll put it like that. And what I soon realized was that although I love this man, he was not the man God had ordained me to marry. And there was nothing wrong with him. You know, he was a good person, but he just wasn't my husband. And, you know, I go into more detail about that in the book, so I don't want to give anything away about that because there are some reasons why I say that. So it became apparent that, you know, I needed to end this engagement, and eventually I did. I share that journey in the book. I ended up ending the engagement. That was a very difficult time for me, and, of course, I had to continue my journey of preparation and get over that bump in the road, continuing my process, which, like I said, ended up being a total of 7 years before I met and then married the man that I'm currently with, which is my current husband. So in my book, you know, I share that, and I devote an entire chapter to, you know, a trick of the enemy, which is, you know, don't fall for the counterfeit. And basically, you know, that's what, you know, this man was in my life. He was a counterfeit. You know, and what do we know about a counterfeit? That it's made to look and feel like the real thing, but it's really a fake when you examine it more closely. And that's exactly what this relationship was in my life. It was a counterfeit. It was a distraction. It was something that was put there to throw me off course, and it did for a minute. But with God's grace, I got back on track and continue my journey. And like I said, when I was going through it, I did not know that this journey would be a book, but, you know, God knew, and he just orchestrated everything in such a beautiful way, and I lay it out in the book, and, you know, it's been an encouragement to so many other single ladies that are Christian, and, you know, nothing's wrong with them, but they are wondering, you know, Lord, when is it my time? What's wrong with me? Why am I not married? And that's where the title, Always a Bridesmaid, the working title was Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Bride, and because that's how I felt as I was going through this journey. You know, all of my friends, everybody around me, it seemed like I went through a season where everybody was getting married. Everybody was getting engaged. They were having babies. And I was like, Lord, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, when is it going to be my time? When am I going to get married? When am I going to get engaged? So that's kind of where the title came from. It came from how I felt as I was going through the journey. You know, I felt like, you know, here I am. You know, another person is asking me to be in their wedding, to be a bridesmaid. I'm always the bridesmaid. I'm never the bride. So that's kind of where that title came from, and it's still true right to this day, you know, several years later. You know, I'm on social media a lot, and I just hear single ladies, you know, complaining and lamenting, you know, I'm the bridesmaid again, you know, and I just encourage them. I'm like, you know, please read my book. I mean, I'm not just, you know, pubbing it to you saying because I want to make a sale. I really want to be a blessing, and that's what encouraged me. I kind of wrote the book from the space of, you know, I'm not in the business of writing books just to make a dollar. I'm in the business of writing books because I want to be a blessing. I want my story, I want my testimony to be a blessing to other women. I want to encourage other women. So when they read my book and they inbox me or they email me or they call me or text me or whatever and just tell me, you know, how much it blessed them, that blesses me because I'm like, wow, you know, God, you took me through this to be a blessing to somebody else. that whole process, it wasn't even about me. It was about me being a blessing to somebody else and showing them that if God did it for me, he can do it for you. Just remain faithful. Just keep the faith. Don't lose faith. Don't lose your hope, you know, when it doesn't happen for you as soon as you think it should. Just work on being the best you that you can be for your husband. And that's what my message is, and that's kind of where the place where my book was born from. It was just born from a place of, you know, I want to be a blessing to other women. I want to encourage them to just keep the faith and to just not grow faint, not get weary, because it does get hard. And I share all of that in the book. I really go deep. You know, I laid it all out there. You know, I didn't leave anything out. I put it all in. And, you know, it really blesses me when women read the book and then they tell me how much it blessed them.
I think that's incredible. You know, there's you being African-American woman, there is this tag that is still floating around that black women can be pretty difficult and headstrong. And so, Paulette, okay, you know, and I won't even go into what my grandmother used to say, because my grandmother used to have really a hard time, you know, seeing a black man with a white woman. I said that over the air, but there's a reason. I'm not racist or anything, but there is this stigma attached to black women being headstrong and domineering. So, Paulette, so you had a relationship that didn't make it. When you look back on that relationship, do you have an understanding of why it didn't work?
Yes, I did, and I do. And it wasn't because I was this strong-willed black woman. You know, when you – it takes a relationship, it takes two people to make it work. And yeah, it does. And so, you know, if one person wants it to work and the other one doesn't, that, you know, it won't, you know, work that way. But, you know, when it comes to me, every relationship, of course, is different. But with my relationship, you know, you have communication that can be a breakdown. You have, you know, the passion to not want the relationship to be a breakdown. I mean, there's many reasons why, but I know it wasn't because I was, you know, a strong-willed woman. But I know that can be a problem for men, especially African-American men. Okay, because with women, with African-American women, I'm going to say, I'm going to put myself out there, and you know, people can talk about me, but I feel that I am a very independent, strong African-American woman who has a standard when it comes to relationships that because my previous relationship taught me some very valuable lessons. I know the kind of man that I want to be in a relationship with. And so because of that, things that I won't accept when it comes to how a man treats me, how he values me, I want a man who's going to accept all of me. That means, you know, my flaws as well as my, you know, my attributes and my assets that I bring into the relationship. And so for some African-American men, that may be very intimidating for them. And not that I want them to be intimidated by me. I want them to be able to accept me, that I am a blessing to them. And just like they're a blessing to me, I want them to be able to understand that I'm bringing something to the table. I'm bringing assets, not liabilities. And so, I think for some African American men, I can present an intimidating factor for them. Not that I want to. I want them to understand that I'm queen, and I know that. And I want to be loved like I'm a queen. Not tell me I'm one, but demonstrate it by what you do to me, how you talk to me, how you show me you love me. Because, you know, I done been around lip service. I need action now. I need for you to tell, show me that you really do love me. And so just like your grandmother, I used to have that issue. I used to have that problem when I would see African-American men with, you know, Caucasian women or any other woman that was not an African-American woman. And I would think, man, that brother is so weak. That would be my mindset. You know, that brother is so weak. He can't take can't handle a sister, you know. But I know that everybody is different. Their flavor is different. But I know for me that he has to come right. He has to step to me right. And treating me right is a main issue for me being able to, because of my previous relationship, I know what I'm willing to accept and what I'm not willing to accept.
All right. I love how you say that. I definitely am not intimidated by black women. As a matter of fact, for most of my life, I've been surrounded with black women, and they are strong. And there are reasons why people have to be strong in this life, because like you said a little earlier, Terry, you talked about counterfeit. So I want to go into that a little deeper. So when you say counterfeit, can you define that for us and what that is?
Sure, absolutely. You know, just like if you think of, you know, a lab manufacturer, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, it's very pretty and it's very brilliant, but it's not the real thing. It's still not a real diamond. And basically, you know, that's what the counterfeit is, you know, just like, you know, they can create diamonds in a lab to look like and mimic real diamond. We all know that. It's not the real thing. It wasn't created by nature. It was created by man. You know, a real diamond, you know, is certain conditions that a diamond goes under to become a precious gem, okay? So a diamond manufactured in a lab is something that's man-made. So if we use that same analogy for a person, you know, I don't want a man, you know, even if he's saved, I want a man who is totally submitted to Christ. And I'll put it like that. When we think of a counterfeit as far as a man or a mate or whatever, that's what I was looking for. I was looking for a man who was totally submitted to Christ, because my thing is, if I'm going to submit to you, brother, you need to be submitted to Christ, because if you're doing things in your own strength, when we go through rough times, and we will go through rough times in marriage, that's just a fact of life, you know, I want to know that you're looking up. You know, you're not looking within. You know, you're looking up from your source. You're looking to get your strength from a power that's greater than you. So that's what I mean when I say, you know, a counterfeit. Because, again, you know, that chapter, I mean, it has resonated with so many women I have heard from. Oh, my God, Terry. You know, when I read that chapter, I was in a relationship like that, or a couple. I'm in a relationship where I feel like this person is a counterfeit, that he's the one. He's not the one for me. So that's what I mean, you know, when I say a counterfeit. It is a person who is not the real thing. You know, they're not who they either, who they want you to perceive that they are, or who you need them to be. You know, they're just not there. So, and like with my ex-fiance, I mean, he's not, you know, a bad person. He just wasn't the man of God for me. We just weren't there spiritually. So when I say counterfeit, you know, that's what I mean.
Okay, I think, and I knew that's exactly what you were referring to, because, again, you know, you get into these relationships and they start off one way, and then, you know, they switch. And so why do you think that is so hard for some people, Paulette, to tear away from a toxic relationship that is not working?
Wow. Another great question. I think soul ties keep, I'm gonna say women together. Soul ties keep women within a relationship with a man, because they have, when you involve sex in a relationship, that makes all the difference in the world, because you now have this soul tie with this individual, and when that's broken, you find it very hard to totally break away, because the man has enraptured you. The man has taken a part of you that now you don't know what to do with without him. You know, not saying that the relationship was just all about sex, but women, when it comes to relationships, women have such a different perspective when it comes to relationship versus men. A man can come into a relationship, and for him, his intentions may just be about sex. And once he gets the sex, then he's gone. But when a woman has sex, it's totally different. She believes she's in a relationship. She believes this man loves her. She believes that, you know, she wants a relationship, a more committed relationship, or a longer relationship than he does. And so the perspective on how we totally different. So when a relationship is broken and when it has toxic in it, women, they say they want to pull away, and for a moment, at that given moment, they do. But over the course of time, he can woo her back by "I'm sorry" and by gifts and by saying he's not going to do it again or whatever the case may be. And then she finds herself going right back in and experiencing the same things in which she had left before. And so I think for women, when they get to the end of the rope and they say enough is enough, that's when they're going to really be committed to the change. I know a woman that was married for 28 years, and the relationship was toxic. He cheated on her for, I want to say, the majority of the time. He physically abused her, mentally abused her, and emotionally abused her for, I'm going to say, the majority of all those years. And one day, she just decided enough was enough. But it was going through all of that abuse. Now, for me, I would say, you know what, it wouldn't take me 28 years to finally get that aha moment, but for her it did. So every woman is different, every relationship is different, and I think that once we get to a point of, you know what, I've had enough of the abuse, I've had enough, and I see more value within myself, that's when that change comes, and that change, you know, is able to really, we can really at that point really turn and start looking at ourselves and how we value ourselves.
Yeah, I think you put that so eloquently. And, you know, there are people that I've known, because I've also hung out with older people a lot, and there was a time when women, you know, the man was very much an infidel, and he was out there running the streets. And some women just say, as long as they're paying the bills, I don't care what they do. And so what are your thoughts about that, Derry?
I agree with everything Paulette said about why women tend to stay in toxic relationships. And pretty much the only thing, you know, I can add to it is part of it could be self-esteem as well. You know, sometimes, you know, people that might have self-esteem issues, they tend to perhaps take some things off of their mate that they probably wouldn't if they had a more healthy self-esteem or view of themselves. And I like something that Paulette said in another comment, that, you know, she knows that she's the queen and that, you know, her husband or whoever, they have to recognize that. So if that is lacking in your life, if you have a poor view of yourself, you will allow other people to run over you, mistreat you, or whatever. And then the other reason I think some people tend to stay in toxic relationships is finances. As you mentioned, you know, for some people, for some women, they may not make as much as their husband, so they feel like they need to stay there for financial security. So it's like, you know, even though he's not doing what he's supposed to do, it's like, well, you know what? You know, let me just look the other way, because where am I going to go? What am I going to do if I leave him? you know, I've been a stay-at-home mom, or, you know, I work, but I don't make nearly enough money to hold down a house by myself. So, again, I think, you know, for some women, they tend to stay in toxic relationships for, you know, finances and because of poor self-esteem and everything that Paulette said. I totally, you know, agree with it 100%, you know, wholeheartedly, you know, everything about the soul ties, you know, especially when you're dating and not married, when you're just dating and when you have sex with somebody. I totally agree that that creates a soul tie, it creates a bond, and that's one of the reasons why I advocate for celibacy for people that are single, because when I went on my journey, that was part of my journey, was to be celibate so that I could date with my eyes wide open. And I share that with other single women, that when you have sex with a man, you know, you're looking at him with a clouded view, you know, through some rose-colored glasses. It's like your judgment is no longer clear once you overstep that boundary, because the word of God is clear. Sex is for the marriage bed. You know, it's not for us to go dibbling and dabbling, but we live in a fallen world, a fallen society, so, you know, the things of God, people don't reverence them like we should. So, you know, there's Christians for saved, you know, single and having sex. I think somebody else wrote that book years ago. But, you know, I mean, I'm not even talking to people outside of the faith, because I've literally been laughed at, you know, when I've shared with, you know, during my journey, and I would share with people that, you know, no, I'm not having sex until I'm married, you know, no, I'm not a virgin, but I feel like even though you may start out on the wrong path, it's never too late to get on the right path. So, you know, people will be like, oh, my God, no man's going to go for that girl. Are you crazy? So, like I said, the whole celibacy thing, you know, I'm not even talking to people that are not in the faith. I'm talking to, you know, Christians when I say, you know, that should be a goal, is to be celibate until you're married. Because, again, like Paulette said, when you create that soul tie with a man and then the relationship ends or it becomes toxic, it makes it that much harder to walk away, because you've given yourself to him. He's a part of you now. You know, he's still there. You know, you've created a tie, a bond with him. So even though the relationship may be over, the tie is still there. And that's something that you have to get out of you before you can even move on. And I think that's one of the reasons why some people, some single ladies, are so messed up as far as relationships are concerned. They have all of these old soul ties that they need to release before they can move forward fresh and anew in another relationship. They need to release old soul ties.
I think that what you got, when I hear someone who is speaking from a perspective of genuine understanding and profound spirituality, I believe those are the stronger people in the world, because you get to a point where you realize it really, when you're single, it doesn't mean that you're alone. It doesn't mean that it's time for the wallowing in self-pity, but it's more so a time of spiritual growth, so that when you do find the person that was destined for you, because I believe that too, I've been myself abstinent, you know, for a while. I just don't believe that exchanging that part of your soul, you know, will get you love. If anything, it will just only create more hurt. So I applaud what you are taking to people out in the world to help them understand that the biggest part of all is learning to love yourself. And it is the greatest love of all. Because if you can love yourself, then you'll know that when you wander into these toxic relationships, that you can get out of them quick. You don't have to wait 28 years like some people do. You'll have enough understanding to go out and seek help and network with other people. And that's what I love about the work that you guys are doing as authors. And I want to talk about this upcoming San Jose, California event. And it is called Authors Empowering Others. Who came up with the idea, and who are some of the authors that are participating in the event?
Well, I'm going to actually have Terry talk to you about that, because she invited me, which I'm so grateful that she reached out to me. So she's going to talk to you about how that came about.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, this event came about because I am a new author. I'm new to the Bay Area, and I was in the process of organizing events to promote my own book, and I wanted to do something special for March, which we know is Women's History Month, and I was like, you know what, I should do some sort of joint event with other Bay Area authors, and we worked together, you know, to do some sort of signing event, and that's how the whole thing came up of, you know, authors empowering others, because I wanted a team of female authors who live in the Bay Area for us to team up, you know, and do a signing, do a book event together, because here, you know, I'm in the South Bay, you know, Paulette's in the East Bay, and then the other author, Natalie, she's in, you know, San Francisco, the actual city. You know, we're all kind of spread out doing our own things, and there's something about, you know, there's strength in numbers. You know, I wanted to show that as women that we can come together, we can support one another, and we can be there with one another, and we can share a platform and it not be about, you know, she's my competitor or, you know, whatever, or scared to help somebody else promote an event because they might take a reader from us. You know, I'm happy to share a platform with other female authors because I feel like, you know, in this culture of mean girls that, you know, we need to show that there are women, you know, there are ladies out there where we uphold each other, we empower each other. It's not about, you know, being competitive and trying to bring the other person down. You know, I support, you know, Paulette and what she does. You know, I support Natalie. She just released her book earlier this month. So the three authors are actually myself, Terry Cato, Paulette Harper, who is also on the call, and then a third author, Natalie Bazile, and she just released her book a few weeks ago, which is called Queen Sugar. So she will also, you know, be with us. And I think it's a good mix of authors because of the space that we're all in. You know, my book is a memoir. Natalie's book is fiction. And then Paulette, you know, your books are kind of like, you know, fiction, but they're inspired by truth, which, and Natalie's is kind of like that as well. So I kind of feel like, you know, it's a nice mix of books. And I feel like with all of us promoting the event to our different platforms, our followers or whatever, you know, it creates a nice synergy because I'm thinking, you know, everybody that's in my network, you know, they'll read my book to support me, but, you know, they might want to read one of Paulette's books, or they might want to read, you know, Natalie's book, or, and vice versa. You know, it's like, you know, everything is not for everybody. So I feel like, you know, that's the importance of, you know, the three of us coming together to just share a platform. Because, again, I just want to reiterate, you know, there's strength in numbers. It's going to be a really, you know, nice, fun afternoon. The Barnes & Nobles is absolutely gorgeous. I mean, nowadays, I mean, because I'm like, I'm a nerd. I love to read. I love to write. So bookstores and libraries, they're like my thing. I love it. So when I go into these, you know, remodel Barnes & Noble stores, I mean, they're absolutely beautiful. I'm like, oh, my God. So it's going to be in a really nice, one of the Barnes & Nobles that's, you know, really nice and new. The cafe is going to be giving out drink samples, and then, you know, there'll be some prizes. Yeah, some giveaways. So, you know, at the end, well, we're going to do an author panel where, you know, we'll all talk. We'll, you know, give more information and background about ourselves. We'll answer questions from people in attendance. You know, so it's basically going to be an author panel. You know, we want to empower people because of the question that I get a lot, and I'm sure Paulette and Natalie probably gets it as well, is other ladies, they want to talk with you, they want to meet with you, they want to have coffee with you to just find out, like, you know, hey, I think I have a book in me, and, like, what did you do to get started, you know? And I'm always happy to share whatever information I have with somebody else that's coming up. So, you know, we'll be there to answer questions like that. So I'm excited about the event. I'm honored, you know, to share the platform with Paulette and Natalie, and I think, you know, I think people are going to have a really good time. It's a kid-friendly event, so, you know, people, you know, don't worry about, oh, my God, you know, I got to figure out something to do with the kids. Feel free to bring your kids. They have a beautiful kids area with, you know, kids activities and books. So, you know, it's going to be a really nice event, and I'm really, really excited about it.
You know, I honestly feel that events like that that encourage intellectual growth aid in so many ways, because one thing that I learned when I was at Stanford University is that there is a breakdown when people don't know how to communicate with one another. So I believe that it's a powerful platform that you have come up with for people to be empowered. And that's exactly what you call it. In honor of Women's History Month, Mahogany Inspiration presents authors empowering others. And so you mentioned the Barnes & Noble, and I want to get this over the air. It's on March 29th at 2 p.m., 3600 Cedar Creek Boulevard in San Jose. And so I want to try to stop by there. So that's the question that I have. So it is in honor of Women's History, but men are also welcome as well, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Men are also welcome. It's open, you know, to the public. You know, it is, like I said, in honor of Women's History Month. That's why we have an all-women's panel. And, in fact, you know, as the information was going out, I actually had a male author reach out to me that wanted to be on the panel. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, you know, and I read a synopsis of his book. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, I want to do something with you. I'm like, but just not this event. I was like, this event is just for women. And I was like, but I'm going to be in touch. I'm like, because we have Father's Day coming up. We got, you know, Juneteenth. So I'm like, I definitely, you know, want to do something with this guy. But he, like, when he heard about the empowerment event, he was like, oh, my God, I heard about this event. You know, can I be a part of it? So, but, yes, guys are welcome to the event. You know, we encourage everybody to come.
Can I add something to that, too?
You sure can.
You know, Terry said something that was just so great, and that was the fact of women coming together. And not only that, but sharing our platform with one another, because we don't get intimidated by the other. And I think that that is so important, because, you know, if I don't know or don't have a lot of followers or, you know, family and friends in certain areas, then, you know, it will help me to connect with another author that may. And so because we're so diverse, we offer, you know, our gifts and our talents are so different, and God has given us, you know, a platform that can reach different people, and people read different types of books. I think the mix is great. I think the ability to be able to capture a different audience and will be there. And so I think that it's great when authors can get together and that we can support one another, because like she said, we're not intimidated by one another, and there's so many readers out there that can, you know, be blessed by what we write, and we can, you know, build our readership by this. And I think that is just wonderful that we can do this together, and we can network with one another, and so and bring that diversity to, you know, to Barnes and Nobles. And I'm just really grateful that she reached out to me. Out of all the authors that are in, you know, this you know, East Bay over here, you know, she you know, picked me to reach out to, and I'm really grateful to be able to be on this you know, the panel and the platform. So, you know, Terry, shout out to you, hat off to you, thank you so much.
And on behalf of A Touch of Grace, I thank you too. I just am always so inspired. And my Aunt Bev, I know she's listening. She's from Michigan, and she writes children's books. So just over there off the top of your head, is there a publisher that perhaps you deal with that that people who are seeking to get involved, that you work with and you trust? Is there someone that you can recommend over the air, or –
Is that for me or Paulette or both? Did you want to go first, Paulette?
Either.
Okay.
As far as publishing a children's book?
Right.
You know what? I don't have, per se, a particular person or publishing company. I've done self-publishing, and for right now, self-publishing has worked for me. Maybe Terry has somebody that she can recommend, but I don't.
You know what I saw? I saw one of the virtual book tour authors. It's called Batch of Books, and the young lady's name is Sherlisa Starks Richardson. And so I saw her book, Summer Rain. So that's why I was just asking out of curiosity, because my Aunt Bev is definitely into children's books.
Well, I know Summer Rain is a youth adult book, and I'm not sure if she self-published that or not. But of course, she could, you know, contact her and get some information in regards to, you know, how she went about publishing her book. I'm sure Sherlisa will be glad to talk to her about that.
Yeah, and looking at her website, it looks like she goes through somebody named Purple Phoenix Publishing. So I'll get with her on behalf of my Aunt Bev, because it's about empowerment, like you guys said. It's about, you know, a lot of us have been at it for a minute, you know. And so if we could guide the way for somebody else, that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to go ahead and get that over the air. So now I talked a little bit about the virtual book tour, and that seems to be an ongoing activity. So, Paulette, is that your baby?
Oh, yeah, that's my baby. That's my
All
baby.
All right.
Yeah, that's my baby. My business is called Right Now Literary Virtual Book Tours, and I've been doing this for, my goodness, for at least 5 years now. And my purpose behind organizing virtual book tours is so that I can help promote other authors. Most of my authors are Christians, but I do open my business up to other genres. If it's not erotica or horror or gay or anything like that, I do have criteria, but, you know, my business is really to promote Christian authors. And Right Now Literary has been doing phenomenal. We connect authors with bloggers and radio shows, and that's where you come in. You have been a tremendous blessing to help other authors promote their book. And so that's my work. I love doing it. And I take an author's book, I pitch it to bloggers, and I pitch it to radio shows in hopes that they will say, yeah, I want to feature that author. I want to share that book with my audience. And these bloggers, they have, you know, hundreds if not thousands of followers that hit these sites, these blogs, and they can see the author's book, they can see the author's bio, they can read excerpts about the book, and that is an opportunity to create the buzz for these authors and the work that they do, especially for a new author. One of the things that when I was a new author back in the day, I had no followers. I had no readers. I had to, you know, learn how to market and promote my book and get myself out there. And so I encourage any first-time author and even one that has been writing for several years but never did a virtual book tour, this is a great opportunity to get your name out there, to reach a larger mass of people right from your own home. You don't have to travel. You don't have to pack your bag. You don't have to spend a whole lot of money going, you know, from place to place. It's from the comfort of your own home, and I encourage anybody to check it out. They can go to my website, which is WNLBookTours.com, and look at and see all the different other author services that I provide, and then also they can get an idea actually about what a virtual book tour does and how effective it can be.
Well, I just want to say thank you, both of you women, first for the authors empowering others, as well as for the virtual book tours, for them being an outlet for people to actually get recognized for the work that they do. I think it's incredible work that you do. And I, again, like I said at the beginning, know that God smiles on you too for being his light and being a light for others. I think that's incredible. So I have a question that I want to ask you guys, but first I want to go ahead and talk about some of the upcoming shows that we have going. So give me a minute, and I'm going to go ahead and talk about those. So tomorrow, Saturday, the 15th of March, author and spoken word artist from Chicago, Robert Ruiz, is going to be joining A Touch of Grace to discuss his incredible life. On the 16th, which is Sunday, playwright Michael McCorkle joins us to discuss the national release of his play on film, A Change is Coming, which has most recently been picked up by Walmart, so I think that's incredible. Huh. On Monday the 17th, Kevin E. Taylor joins us for part two of the interview that we had a couple of weeks ago. And so he's just a phenomenal person who has interviewed the likes of Tina Turner, Natalie Cole. He worked for BET for a number of years, but now he's doing something with his own venture called Now What? I'd also like to give thanks to my friends over at World Media, in particular Mr. Wayne Barros, who really has been a great support and a friend to me. He's actually the one that helped make the interviews with Howard Hewlett and Lucas and Brown possible, so I can't thank him enough for his encouragement. So now I'm going to go back to the ladies of the hour, and that is Terry Cato and Paulette Harper, authors and entrepreneurs and extensions of God's love. And so the question that I want to ask you, ladies, and I'll ask you first, Paulette, if you could go back to 15-year-old Paulette, what advice, what type of inspirational words would you give 15-year-old you?
Oh, my God. The advice that I would give them would be to stay committed and focused to school, stay committed and focused in their relationship with the Lord. First of all, establish a relationship with the Lord and allow him to lead and guide them. Stay committed in school and learning as much as they possibly can to get their degree and go on to be extraordinary entrepreneurs, and do exactly what's in their heart to do as long as it lines up with the will of God for their lives.
Well, wonderful. And, Terry, I ask you that same question. You go back in time. You see 15-year-old Terry at the playground. What would you say?
Wow. What I would tell my 15-year-old self is to, you know, just not be so serious, but just really enjoy life when you're young and to, you know, to really pursue your passion and to not always, you know, be focused on, oh, my God, you know, I got to be so serious, I got to be so mature. But, you know, that's partly a product of just who I am, you know, being the oldest of five children. You know, I would just really, you know, tell myself to just loosen up, you know, have some fun, do some, you know, wild and crazy stuff. You know, because I was always the responsible one, you know, always the mature one, you know, always, you know, making the right decisions and being responsible, you know. And if I could just, you know, tell my 15, when I was 15, you know, I wanted to be like a music producer. So I would tell myself, go for it, you know, go to Atlanta, you know, and see if you could become, you know, a music producer. Don't be scared. I think at 15, I was like scared. I was terrified, you know, of just messing up. So that's kind of what, you know, I would tell my 15-year-old self is to just, you know, go for it. Don't be afraid to fail. Just live life, you know, because you have plenty of time to recover. You know, don't feel like you got to have it all figured out, you know.
Okay. That's fantastic. And I want you to take that as food for the soul and go back and reflect on what you told your 15-year-old self. Now, before we leave, where can your book be purchased? What's the latest release out now, and where can it be purchased?
Well, my latest book is called Living Separate Lives. It is a Christian fiction novella, and people can purchase copies of my book on Amazon and also Barnes & Noble. They can go to my website, which is pauletteharper.com, and read a little bit about Living Separate Lives, but on all the online portals, they can get a copy of my book. If they want an autographed copy, they can email me at info@pauletteharper.com, and I'll be glad to shoot them an autographed copy.
All right. And what about you, Terry?
Okay, for me, my book is No Longer a Bridesmaid, and it can be purchased on Amazon, on their website, booksamillion.com. It can be found on barnesandnobles.com, as well as in Barnes & Noble retail locations and various other online portals that I'm not even aware of that sell books. If you do a search, No Longer a Bridesmaid, it'll come up, and you can purchase it on all of those different platforms.
All right, that sounds great. And I want to thank both of you lovely ladies for joining A Touch of Grace. A Touch of Grace has about 30,000-plus visitors to the platform. It is becoming its own powerful platform for guests who come on, and it's certainly an honor for me to provide exposure to so many worthy talents out there. And so I just want to say thank you guys for coming on today, and you have an open door. Anytime you want to come back on the show, you let me know, okay?
Well, thank you so much, Evie. I appreciate you.
All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And you guys have a wonderful afternoon, okay?
You as well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, everybody. That's the show for today, but I want to leave you a message. The passage of time allows us to get back many things, but one thing we can never get back are the years gone by. Every success, failure, and mistake are etched on that once blank slate we call our lives. The years are something we can never get back. We all have a one-way ticket to what lies beyond. So before that time happens, make sure that you're loving yourself. Make sure that the energy that you're putting out to the cosmos is great. Live and let live. Let people be who they are. And just work on you. And if you work on you, trust, everything will be okay. Thanks once again for tuning in today. This is GD saying, I love you.